What's up, everyone? Welcome to the 610th episode of the Pokemon Podcast. It's super effective. I'm your host, Steve. With me today is Hannah.
I am here. I just got back biking for half an hour. It's thankfully not raining outside. I'm all good. Just a little tired.
I traveled all day. I'm a little tired.
You're more tired.
Bobby is also here.
I'm actually not tired because I'm getting better sleep since I'm using Pokemon Sleep now.
I don't think that's true.
I mean, it's kind of true. I'm at least tracking my sleep now. Maybe
okay. It's not
that much better, but it's being tracked.
Theoretically, that improves things.
Yeah.
According to some studies.
Sure. I have confirmation that I'm not doing well sleeping, but, you know, at least now, yeah. Now I have confirmation.
That's not the same thing as it improving, but...
I just got back from PAX East, and Pokemon was there, so we'll talk about that. We also have the April update for Pokemon Go, and we have an interview with somebody who used to work at Pokemon that talks about shutting down fan-made games, which... It came out like 2 weeks ago, but we've been covering other stuff. But before we get to any of that, let's talk about Pokemon Sleep. Since if you're listening to this, it will finally be the Raikou event, which is the first legendary.
Finally.
And it's more importantly, it's been a full week since Bobby's been playing Pokemon Sleep. So how is your first week experience?
You know, I'm not really sure what I'm doing in the game still. The whole, like, I am sleeping, I'm waking up, collecting Pokemon, which is what I was promised when this game was introduced. So it's fulfilling that promise. But aside from that, it's fun. But again, I haven't really delved into, like, all of the... I haven't opened up any websites to see any calculators or anything.
haven't watched any of the YouTube videos.
No, haven't really like jumped in that deep, but I am getting started with it. So
what does your team look like?
Oh, what does my team look like?
You got that berry find in Caterpie.
I have a berry find in Caterpie, but it's not level 10 yet. So, but I have a Caterpie. I have a Pikachu. I have a Togepi. I can open up the app and see. I'm Pikachu, Caterpie, Togepi. I know those three. I just caught
a real Ash Ketchum in the making.
I have a Charmander. And I have a Mankey. So not really sure. Lapis. Yeah. So right. Well, so the first week it wouldn't let me choose my location or island.
Yeah, you'll have to unlock sleep styles to get more locations. So the more Pokemon you find, the more locations you can go to.
Yeah. So
I haven't unlocked Lapis yet.
So I mean, it's fun. I haven't bought anything yet, shockingly.
no premium.
So I haven't yet. I was going to start that like try, because you get like a 2 week trial, right? So
I think starting it during Raikou is probably the safe bet.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So I was actually going to start it today and then see how that improves my... I really need to like learn more about it though. Like I really have not like jumped into a whole bunch of stuff because Steve, I told you this the other day. At the same time, I also downloaded Cafe Remix, and so I've been playing that as well.
That was that's
talking about games that take
right
your money.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not spending any money on that. It's like filled with just money. But so I haven't really gone deep into Pokemon Sleep yet, but I'm getting there, and it's fun. It's another app to open in the morning other than Pokemon Go. So there is that to it.
We didn't mention this last week. I did mention this in the Slack. I think this is really, well, we're going to do some more Raikou stuff for those that are still very confused on what's happening. We have more information now. It is Monday in not America. So we know how Raikou works, I think, to the fullest at this point. I think the only thing we don't know is if it's shiny locked or not. because we know that the first Raikou you catch will be the same as everyone else's Raikou. So the skills and everything will be the same. We just don't know if they locked the skills and locked the shiny. But again, there hasn't been a shiny lock in the game yet. So, but it could be just like the first one is locked and then everyone after that is unlocked. But I don't know. Again, we'll probably find out. By the time this podcast goes up, we'll probably find out, because I'm sure a bunch of whales will have bought the incense and then used the incense to use the Master Ball, and then one of them would probably see a shiny, I would assume. So I think, like Pokemon Go, we'll find out very quickly if something is locked or not.
Speaking of Master Ball, Master Ball Biscuit, or whatever they're called, you last week said that like I would have to kind of buy a Master Ball Biscuit or whatever for the tutorial.
Huh?
But it made me use it. I couldn't get around to using it.
I feel like before a certain update, there was a way to like quit during using it.
I could have tried to close the app, I guess, and just seen if like the tutorial just kind of skipped past it. But I had to use it. So I'm pretty sure I used it on a Caterpie.
I was wondering if it was the Caterpie.
That was the very fine S.
It was the very finding S Caterpie, yes.
Perfect. That's worth the Master Ball. So this is what we didn't say last week. This was on, we covered two different Pokemon Sleep dot, I think it's PokemonSleep.net, whatever. Yeah, the official Pokemon Sleep website. They had two articles about Raikou. They actually had a third one, which was like 3 weeks ago. But anyways, the most important part about that third one, it says, we are preparing functions that rewards that allow Pokemon Sleep beginners to research Raikou sleeping styles and befriend it. So I think this is the thing I want to stress, why it's really funny that Bobby just started playing, because I think it's very possible and very easy for Bobby and anyone else who is like just started playing or free to play to get this Raikou. I think that you don't need a Master Ball, and I would actually maybe argue that using your Master Ball on Raikou is probably a waste, unless you really want multiple Raikous for different skills. But we now know that the Raikou biscuit gives 6. We know that last week. And Raikou needs 30 points to capture, which is higher than any other Pokemon. I think Tyranitar and Dragonite is like 24 or 25 or something. They're like they were the highest up to this point. We also know the store. But ideally, if we just do basic math, 30 divided by 6 is 5. So you have to have 5 Raikou biscuits to get him. And as far as I know, no Pokemon gets hungry after one. So if you give him one biscuit, he's not going to... So let's say he always gets hungry after 2, which is my experience with Dedenne, which is incredibly frustrating. You would only have to see Raikou 3 times and have 5 biscuits to get him. And they've made it really possible to see Raikou 5 times minimum with the store. So we know the store stuff now.
The event store, they are calling it the event exchange, the thing that hasn't showed up for any of us yet.
Oh, where you can exchange the main for the biscuits or the incense?
Where you can exchange the special currency that is being used only in this event for the items that are being used to catch Raikou.
Right, okay.
When you sleep, you will be getting Raikou main. And also, if you have friends on your friends list, instead of getting candy this week, it's possible to get Raikou main. And you can only get Raikou main 1 sleep session a day, so napping will not help. It's your first sleep session of the day, just keep that in mind. But in the store, you'll be able, in the non-paid store, in the exchange store that Hannah said, very easy. The first 2 Raikou incenses are 80 mains. And then the next 3 after that are 160. So without spending any money at all, you can get Raikou to show up 5 times, guaranteed. And that's not... And even if you had the worst luck of, like, he's hungry after... He fills up after 2, and he's not hungry, so you don't get the boost. Which, if you got the boost, that's 3... That's, what, 6 times 3? That's 18. Like, you would just have to be prepared to have a biscuit or 2 biscuits per Raikou. And even so, like, even if you didn't have the biscuits or you used 2 and he was still hungry, you could still use your premium biscuit. You could still use your daily biscuit. You could still use your great ball. It's 2 weeks long. You should be really good to not use your Master Ball at all. I would say if you are going to use your Master Ball, I would probably use it as soon as possible. So then when he does appear again, if he's hungry or if you have biscuits, then you can get a second one even quicker.
Okay. Didn't the event... I could be completely wrong. I thought it said only one would show up during the event, though.
I feel like it did.
Didn't it say, like, after the event it can show up more?
Yeah, one per person, and then it would show up in the future after the event.
Yeah, but you can still force him to spawn with the incense. And he will spawn for sure after Master Rank 9. Well, not for sure. In order to get him to spawn in the future, you have to be at least Master Rank 9. But that doesn't apply to the incense.
Right.
So, like, if you can get to Master Rank 9 in the week, in this week or next, I guess in any future week, there's a chance that he will appear.
You're Rank 9? How do you get to Master Rank 9?
You get better.
I think the highest I've gotten to is like 16 or 17.
I guess I got to get good because I'm not there or anywhere near it.
So yeah, and then it, also in the store, biscuits are, the first two biscuits are 60 main. Then you can
get... this is all assuming we are able to get enough of the Raikou main.
I was going to say, how much are you getting a night? Or like when you do get it, what was the...
Well, you're getting it from when your Pokemon wake up in the morning after their sleep. And then you're also getting it based on Pokemon spawning in your camp. And then it looks like you're getting two-ish for your friends list. So I'm thinking, like, if you have 50 friends and you're getting two per friend, because the one screenshot I saw, like, their whole friends list, all of it had Raikou main, that's 100 a night.
Okay.
Assuming you have a full friends
list. That's better than I was expecting.
Well, I need more friends.
Yeah. It doesn't say your friends are guaranteed to give you Raikou main, but when you see a screenshot of seven friends and they're all Raikou main... Like I can only see seven in the screenshot, and they're all Raikou main. So assuming they had 50 friends, that's pretty good. That seven in a row got main. I don't know what the other 43 got. I think I'm just stressing. 30 to fill them, six per main. Six times five is 30. You can give him two normally when he appears. Should be plenty. And again, the store lasts for 2 weeks, so it's not like you have to buy all of this stuff this first week, and if you miss them, it's gone. But now, I think if you are limited on points and you only have one Master Ball, I think I'm really stressing, I don't know if it's worth using your Master Ball, because if they're going to introduce Lugia or Ho-Oh or Entei or Suicune, we don't know if those Pokemon will also have a two-week event. Maybe some of them will, but I can't imagine they're going to be like, here's a two-week event for every single Legendary.
They could. They absolutely could.
Yeah. I guess they could if they make some money. But I also think it's smart that I think this has to be on purpose. So they did the like electric week, and then there's a week of nothing in between, which we just finished, which I think was smart, because when you go into the 2 weeks of Raikou, you actually get an opportunity to buy two Master Ball biscuits. You get the one for this month, and then the month resets, and then you have so if you already wasted your Master Ball biscuit this month, Hannah.
Wasted. My Dedenne is fantastic. I have gotten so many critical hits on my meals thanks to my Dedenne.
And I have a Caterpie.
That's true. If you either got a Caterpie or a Dedenne this month, you would technically be able to buy Master Ball in, 6 days? Mm-hmm. Like, I just feel like if you used your Master Ball these 2 weeks, and then Raikou just appears in 6 months in the future and you don't have a Master Ball, there's just like no way you're going to get it, right? Because you already have to get to Master Rank 9. And it's I just think of like trying to get Absol or Dedenne to appear.
Yeah, I had a Kangaskhan in my game for the second time this morning. I finally got it more than halfway. This game's been out for 7 months? 8 months? Yeah.
I have yet to see a Charizard, which I think is what Master Rank 12 he starts appearing. I think I've seen a Venusaur before. I think if you're free to play, maybe I think you should be fine. It does seem very, based off the screenshots and everything, it does seem very obtainable that everyone should be able to get a Raikou if they're just playing every day for free. You could just buy Maine in the store, by the way. They are selling Ryko Maine for real money in the store.
Yeah, they are. The largest of the boxes is 3,000 diamonds, which is about $50.
How much Maine are you getting for that?
Wow.
250,
you're
right?
You're getting 200 Ryko Maine for that. But you're also getting a bunch of Ryko candy with it.
Yeah. You can use your main to just get candy in the store. You can also get a main skill seed. I didn't know this for the Ferali the first 3-4 weeks of the game. Main skill seeds are super good. So if you caught your Ryko and you're debating on what to use your main on, I think main skill seed for sure.
Yep. Especially if you're a free-to-play player, you don't have very many opportunities to get the skill seeds.
Yeah, skip Thunderstone, skip Dream Clusters, skip the candy. Well, get the Ryko candy eventually, but like once you catch Ryko, probably 100% prioritize that main skill seed. Because you only get one of them, and it's 350 main. But again, you have 2 weeks. You also get main from doing missions, so getting Snorlax the basic 2 is going to get you 15, Ultra 1, 25, Ultra 4, 40. Give out 15 biscuits, 40. Use 7 incense, 40. Stick to your bedtime. Bobby, that'll get you 40.
That's the tough one for me.
That's the one I never get.
That's the one I never get. So, and I have the notifications on. So like, you know, like the other day, my wife was sitting next to me and my phone, you know, and it went off, like the thing went off and it was like, you know, Pikachu's ready for bed, are you? And she was like, what is that? I was like, just trying to get me to go to sleep. Doesn't work ever. But
it seems like a great event, though. I do like how they've made it free to play friendly, but I feel like they've also made it whale friendly. They're like, here's how you can give us money. Here's how you can get more than one Ryko. If only Niantic could learn from the free to play friendly.
Again, Pokemon Sleep is still in early game. They can and probably will get worse over time.
Speaking of what's gotten worse over time, I think PAX has gotten worse over time.
Oh no.
Really?
Yeah.
It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I know I always say, like, this company paid for me, but I legally have to say it. Like, in the U.S., you have to disclose when a company gives you something of monetary value, even if it's, like, $10. Full disclosure, PAX paid for my 4-day pass, 2 packs, which I think is like $250. I bought my own flight, bought my own hotel, that kind of stuff. So there's just your disclosure. Legally, I have to say that. I've been to probably 10 PAXes between PAX East, PAX West, PAX South, which no longer exists. And I do think same with Pokemon Go, I think a lot of the events, even though PAX is inside, does rely on like the weather of a city and how like nice it is. Like spending, what was my flight, like $350 to get to Boston and it just pouring / being incredibly cold and bitter all weekend does not invite you to want to explore that city in any means.
Nope. Being in a big, huge convention center didn't help, though. I'm assuming it was in one.
The thing that I love about Boston is the public transportation is so good. So when you take like Orange Line down to South Station and then you transfer to Silver Line, that's still like a 10-minute walk from the end of Silver Line to PAX, which is all outside. And like you could Uber, I guess. Like I did Uber when it was pouring on the last day. I went
10-minute walk in the rain.
Yeah, I went like South Station. I went from Orange Line to South Station and then I Ubered from South Station to the convention. So I just didn't walk that last 10 minutes. And it was still like a $15 Uber to like literally get that far. And I can't imagine doing that every day. Look, I know there are people that are like, I'm Ubering every day. I'm not taking public transit. But like that is such an appeal to Boston for me, is like the fact that you don't need a car and that you can get so many places on public transit. It was just like a really cold weekend. The biggest vendors at PAX were Final Fantasy XIV. They're always there. And then Baldur's Gate 3 had a huge booth. They had that like one game of the year. So that makes sense. They were there. the Diablo game that's not Diablo. I can't remember what it is. Path of Exile had a really big booth. And then Nintendo / Pokemon had technically like three booths, which was announced. For the record, this is like not Pokemon does. It's not a surprise Pokemon or Nintendo was there. Nintendo actually goes to quite a bit of PAXs. The PAX right before COVID, Nintendo had like the world's coolest Animal Crossing booth that you could visit. And it had the longest line for the merch. They had like a separate booth that was just like Animal Crossing merch that was...
Well, that was right before the game came out.
Yeah, it was before the game came out. And the line for the merch was insanely long, and you would have to get there at 8 a.m., stand in line for like 4 hours, and hope they have the t-shirt in your size, because they would run out every day and then restock sizes and stuff. So this year they had the Playlab, which they've been doing at pretty much every PAX. They also did it at Pokemon Go Seattle, Go Fest Seattle. They had the Playlab there too. Did they have Playlab at New York? Probably not, because it was outside.
Yeah, no.
Seattle had like a convention hub hall that they put it in.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that.
But what the Playlab is you wait in line to learn how to play the TCG. They give you like a 30 card deck, like a smaller deck. And it was funny because the guy was like, we definitely like rig the deck so like your opening hand is not terrible, but like everything after that is randomized, which is like really smart for like teaching to be like, okay, I'm guaranteed at least one supporter, two item cards, energy, three Pokemon, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you wait in line to get a pin, and at PAX Unplugged, which is the board gaming one, they were giving away a Quaxly pin. And then at Seattle, the one I went to, they gave away a Fue Coco. And I think East last year, which I missed, was Sprigatito. And I was like, okay, they did all three starters. Maybe they're recycling. Nope. They got more. This time it was Tasaguri, the curly form, which was really cool. The cool thing about PAX pins is they just ripped off Disney. All it is the Disney, like, get a pin and then trade or sell. Like, there was a Cyberpunk panel that ended, and people were pouring out of the Cyberpunk panel. If you went, you got a free pin. But people were waiting at the exit of the Cyberpunk panel being like, anyone selling pins? Selling pins? Give you $20 for your pin? Because they were like planning to flip it because they're worth money. The Pokemon ones are worth money too. Usually these pins are like $15 to $20 normally at like a booth. Like, oh, I'm going to go to like the Night in the Woods booth and get the Night in the Woods PAX pin. It's like $15. But the Pokemon ones are free. Always have been free. You can't buy them. You do have to sit through the entire demo of them teaching you how to play. It's a good experience. They give you like free stickers. They give you like a little book. When you're done, you get the pin. You get a free 30 card deck. Like, they give you a lot of stuff just for waiting in line and playing the TCG.
Well, you also learn the TCG, which I would say is an experience in itself to people who don't know the TCG.
Oh, it's really smart. Like, the miss here to any Nintendo or Pokemon rep listening to this podcast. There's no Pokemon Center at PAX, which is mind-blowing to me. That,
yeah.
Especially when PAX has more show floor ever since COVID, where it's like they could definitely... Look, also Nintendo could just get any part of the show floor they want.
Right? Yeah.
That's not a problem. But the Playlab is pretty big to like sit down and play, and then you walk across to another booth area which had photo opportunities with like a blow-ups Quaxly, Fue Coco, Sprigatito. And then there's just like a what could be a merch store, but it's just like two people sitting there being like, okay, you played, here's your pin, what deck would you like for free? And it just feels like a big miss for a convention, a gaming convention with opportunity for people to spend money. I mean, like, merch is just a big part of gaming conventions. And I say, like, oh, well, maybe they've never done that before. They have at Gen Con, the very first year they appeared at Gen Con, which was before COVID, trying to remember, 2018, I think, maybe 2017. They just had a Pokemon Center. It was no Playlab. It was just a physical store, and they were just selling things. And I don't know if they do that anymore. I know for sure Playlab does go to Gen Con. But it feels like a miss for them, because there's so many like smaller booths like Fangamer or whatever that just sell Pokemon merch. Or
yeah, that's where you get Pokemon merch at any convention, all the small fan stuff.
Well, I was gonna say, does Nintendo sell any merch at PAX at all?
They sold the Animal Crossing stuff
4 years, 5 years ago. But since they haven't, Nintendo's not selling anything since then.
Before Animal Crossing, it was Mario Odyssey, and they were selling Odyssey merch. And then before Odyssey was Zelda. Here's the King, not Tears, Breath of the Wild. What Zelda game was that? And they were selling Breath of the Wild stuff.
So maybe it's a Pokemon decision.
I mean, it seems
like they're selling stuff when there's a lot of hype around a game, and Pokemon is kind of ongoing hype, and they don't have a new main series game coming out this year, as far as we know. There's a lot of cost that goes into getting the stuff there, and so maybe it's just not worth it.
If they brought stuff, they would not have to bring anything back. I feel like they would definitely sell through it.
I feel like they would do a good job at selling regardless, but
If you're getting a free 30-card deck and a free pin, it's almost a good opportunity to be like, here, we have ETBs. Like, oh, you enjoyed playing the TCG. You now know how to play at a very basic level. Look at this $50 ETB behind us that you could purchase on your way out.
And it's brand new. I mean, specifically for this weekend, it brand new set came out on Friday. So there is that, I guess. But
yeah, I just feel like that's like a slightly missed opportunity to be like, oh, Pokemon has such a huge presence here, because they were one of the bigger booths. Not that they had a lot to compete with. But you could walk away with like a Pikachu plush. The third booth, because they had three, was not near the Play Lab or the like Redeem area. It was on the other side of PAX, and it was a demo station with like 6 to 8 Nintendo Switches set up in like, you know, what you walk into like GameStop and they have like the demo station or whatever, Target. And you could pick between Legends Arceus, Scarlet and Violet, or Detective Pikachu. And they had ready to go demos for all three of those games. And you would think after 2+ years of Legends being out, that was like the most played game I saw on all of those screens, where people like, oh, I want to demo Legends.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it makes me think like sometimes we feel like we're in our bubble of like, oh, everyone has played Legends at this point, but where else do you really have an opportunity to play that if you don't have a friend, or if you didn't drop $60?
It's also the most, I would say it's the hyped game right now, just because there's a Legends game coming. So I could see people thinking, oh, there's the next game is a Legends game, or the next game they announced is a Legends game, and now I can play a different Legends game. So I'll, you know, give that a try or something like that, you know? So I could see that being popular just for that reason. It's also a great game. So there's that.
And then on the other side of the demo station that they had set up, they had this hand-painted mural. I don't know if you guys saw pictures of that on Twitter.
It looked so good.
It was so cool in person. They finished it on Thursday morning before the con opened. So I think if you were like media, or you were the very first people that got in, you could see them finishing it up. I think they originally started it at New York Comic Con, maybe? And it wasn't completely done. And then they brought it here. And then the artist was finishing it. I slept through that, by the way. I didn't get in. I got in really late on Wednesday, and I was like, I don't know if I can get there at 9 a.m. to see them finish it. But it was finished, and then they allowed people to draw Pokemon on the left or right side in chalk. And then every hour, they would like wipe down the chalk, and then more people would come in. And then on the other side of that was a photo opportunity with either Pikachu or Eevee, and obviously they cycled every like 20 minutes. So dominant there, Pokemon and Nintendo, but like no way to give them money in any capacity, which I just think is very weird.
I mean, you can pick up your phone and give them money at any point in time.
That's true.
Yeah, I was gonna say, anyone who walked away from that TCG experience and enjoyed it is gonna give Pokemon a lot of money in the coming days and months, yeah, probably.
The other thing about the Play Lab is they started doing VGC stuff. This is the first time ever. So I was waiting in the TCG line. So I was like, I don't need to do VGC stuff. I just want the pin. You got a different, like, you got like stickers or something for doing VGC?
You didn't get a pin for doing the VGC?
No, you got a different prize. Which I think you should, like, they should give you the pin. They should.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what everybody wants, right? I mean, we just talked about the pin for like 10 minutes.
So. The sticker, yeah, the pin is great. The stickers are like a vinyl, like, not permanent sticker. So if you put it on something, you could technically peel it off.
Sure.
They're like a fancier.
Those are popular right now.
Yeah, they're fancier stickers of like Koridon, Midoridon, Lechonk, all that stuff.
Ooh.
So bonk. I'm just about to like get sat down to play, and then the Nintendo rep who was the one that walked me through the Scarlet and Violet DLC demo was there.
Nice.
And she stopped me, and she was like, "Did you do the VGC stuff?" And I was like, "No, I want the pin."
See?
And she said, "Well, this is the first time we're doing VGC stuff. I built all the demo teams. I would like you to do it because I want feedback on how these demo teams are." That's and cool. So I did the TCG stuff, and then she pulled me after that, and then she put me into the VGC thing, which I wasn't going to do originally. And they had like three rental teams. One was like a Dondozo team. One was a team with Ogrepan. One was another team. They were, and the thing I noticed, because it was like double battles, and they were teaching people how to play VGC. And the thing I noticed was only one Pokemon on each team of six only had Protect. And I was like, wow, this is really weird. Like, I'm so used to like 5 out of 6 Pokemon having Protect, and the one that doesn't have Protect is like probably Assault Vested or something, right? Or like Choice Banded. And I gave her that feedback. I was like, I'm so used to like protecting and like setting up and then being able to like play around that. And I was like, I guess that's my feedback. Like, I thought these teams were really neat. Like, Ogrepan is Ogrepan. She's a queen. She's like super strong, really hard to like, why would you not pick the Ogrepan team? Like, she's so good. But then I was thinking, like, you know how, like, the TCG, like, walks you through it, whether you're playing TCG Live or PTCGO or whatever, and they, like, kind of, like, fake the first couple turns because they need to, like, teach you how to play. To be like, oh, mm-hmm. You drew an energy, place it here, like, play the supporter. There's, like, right. No way to fake that in VGC. And even though I'm like, oh, I think these teams need more Protect, as I'm, like, in the shower after PAX, like, thinking about this, I'm like, a person who's never played VGC or somebody who's just gone through the story, they've probably, like, never hit Protect. Like, why would you?
That's true.
And so if you're playing VGC for the first time, and the people teaching you are like, well, you might want to hit Protect here. Why would I want to hit Protect? Because they might double into your Pokemon. But why would they do that? It's, like, so complicated. To be like, why is this move here, and why would I use it? So I,
but that's
I,
the, that's the strategy though.
Yeah, that's what, like, you're supposed to be learning.
That's how, that's the learning, right? Because if you go into a demo and you play it a certain way, and then you go into the real world of the VGC, it's going to be very different, right?
Yeah.
Than what that demo is. Whereas they could make the demo set up to be more like what you're going to see when you're actually in there playing the VGC. I don't play the VGC at all. So, but I'm just going off of what you just said, in that you're like constantly seeing this or you're constantly seeing that. So, I mean, I think that would make sense to set it up in a way like that, since that's kind of what it is going into it in the real world.
Yeah, I think they should probably make an active attempt to make sure you are learning defensive moves, make sure you are learning setup moves. I am only just starting to get into some of this a little bit more right now, but I'm definitely one of those people who will go through an entire playthrough and just attack, 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 never use Protect, never really use status moves, never raise or lower any stats of mine or my opponents in my own playthrough. And that's really what they should be teaching people.
Yeah, this is like, again, their first time doing it. And some employees were like, yeah, they didn't have enough switches, so that this is my switch, so ignore my, like, side teams here.
Wait, hold on. Nintendo, yeah. Pokemon Company, these juggernaut companies didn't have enough Switches?
Yeah. It seemed like a very last minute addition to the PlayLab. Okay. Because, again, this is the first time they did it. And the first day, on Thursday, they had one line to get into the PlayLab. And then the second day, and for the rest of the con, they broke it into two lines, VGC line and TCG line. Which was smarter, which was much better.
Yeah, you could probably get to the VGC a whole lot faster that way.
Yeah, but it was exciting that they were starting that, because I think that's cool. There's nothing in the game to, like... Well, there's a lot that's not in Scarlet and Violet. There's nothing in the game to, like, set up a certain scenario like the TCG. Like, they can stack the deck in the TCG. They can be like, I can guarantee your 7-card hand and the first 3 cards you're about to draw. Like, they can stack it in a way where... Because I've played TCG for a long time, and even if you're... Even if you're like doing something like a 30 card deck, very friendly, small thing, you could be like, oh, I drew an energy. Okay, pass. Next turn. Oh, drew an energy. Okay, pass. Okay, next turn. Because that happens. It's just like how it shuffles. But they can like at least set it up so that that doesn't happen. And there's like no setup in VGC to be like, okay, I want you to double attack the Ogre Pawn. Ogre Pawn person, I want you to protect.
They could tell you which Pokemon, they could already have the team set up and already have the Pokemon chosen that are going to be sent out. What on in the VGC, was it people learning on both sides playing against each other?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. It wasn't against a computer. It was
no,
actually
no, it was
people
you
against
could,
people.
If you were with a friend, well, it would depend, right? You could also bring your own team. They did say, like, oh, if you have your Switch and you want to use your team, you can bring it. So you could wait in line, like me and Bobby could wait in line. We could use our own teams, and then at the end, we get the sticker pack.
That's a lot less controlled.
I was going to say, yeah, you could also just you want the stickers. I was going to say, you could also just pull your Switches out in line. And play
we could just also play a wall in line, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you didn't, like, there's a lot of people that go to PAX by themselves. Like, I feel like that's not talked about a lot. I feel like the amount of people that I see in solo situations or not with any groups of friends is very high. And especially when you're waiting in line. Like, I was in a group of 4, and there were, in front of us was groups of 3, and behind us was a group of 3. And so, like, the PAX people would be like, all right, who's solo? Okay, we're going to take this solo person, move it into a group. Like, there's a lot of solo people at PAX. So I could imagine, like, oh, maybe I want to get into the VGC and you're waiting in line and they're like, okay, let's find 2 solo people. We're going to put you together. We're going to teach you how to do this. By no means do I think, like, that scenario was prime time ready, but, like, they kind of have to start doing it to, like, figure out how to do it well. It took them really long with Teach CG to be like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be giving people 60 card decks. Maybe we should cut it down to 30 and have the 30 deck way more controlled. So for people to have a good time.
Yeah. It seems like that they could be on the road to that with the VGC if this was really the first time that they did it. But it does seem like there should be some more control there if they're going into a demo and they're going to, like in the TCG, they're teaching you how to play the game. And in the VGC, like you said, the game itself doesn't really teach you how to play the VGC well, right? The story doesn't, as we were just saying, we're just attacking the entire time until, you know, you get to the end. So someone needs to do that, especially if it's a demo, because if they're going to demo and want you to get into it, you may enjoy it in the moment, but it would be helpful if it's something that's geared toward, and then you can go and use this in when you go play the VGC when you go home. And it's not like they're going to sit down and be like, well, I played it this way. And then they're just going to get completely crushed when it's like, oh, they're playing people who are actually playing it differently than the demo went.
I also don't think the stickers were like a good enough prize.
Well, if this is new and if it was last minute, I'm not too surprised by that. But I do that this is starting to exist as someone who would love to have more opportunities to learn about VGC in situations like that. If they were giving the pin out for both the TCG and the VGC, I would have chosen the VGC and I would have tried to learn more there.
You know, if they were giving the pin out for both, I would have probably just gotten to VGC because the TCG is longer. It's like 30 plus minutes because they do have to like teach you, and you have to like shuffle and draw and like a VGC match.
They should be teaching you in the VGC as well.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure they are to some. They didn't need to teach me. I knew what to do.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing. You already knew what to do. I'm sure they probably are able to kind of alter how much they are interacting in the TCG too. Like how much they're teaching a person.
I think it's definitely in the VGC part, like the person I played against wasn't like super knowledgeable. So I was like, you can like, and the person was like, do you want help? And they were like, yes. And so it was like them talking, but it was also like me like hearing them talk. And I was like,
yeah,
I don't want an unfair advantage because like, oh, it sounds like, oh, you should swap this out. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear this. I'm just going to commit to the move I said I was going to before I heard like, you should swap this out.
But that's probably the same on the TCG side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you have to think that most of these people going into this demo aren't people who play the VGC or play Pokemon 8 to 10 hours a day for their job, you know? Yep. So like you are kind of a bit of an outlier there as someone playing the demo, I think.
I also don't know if like, cause I overheard like one person being like, yeah, they let me bring my own team. And I just creamed the other guy. I just destroyed him. And it was like, I don't know.
See, that's what you don't want.
No. Right. Yeah. That's what you do. So I don't know if they played against somebody they knew or was it just a random person? Because like, I don't think that's fair. Like when I look through all those teams and I look through the balance and stuff, like there's no way these teams can like, they were good against each other. Like I saw like the paper rock scissors thing that she built for these teams. By no means do I think these teams were like bad in the sense of like bad. They were just not competitive teams, right? They were just not built for what you see this weekend. And what was where were they? Vancouver this weekend? Toronto?
Vancouver. It kind of sounds like they should maybe not let people use their own teams and maybe should not only have the pre-built teams but should have a set, like a preset three Pokemon that are being, or four, you can tell I don't VGC, four Pokemon that are being chosen to send out, kind of like they stack your hand for the first draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
on the TCG side,
because on the TCG side you can't bring your own 30 card deck, right? You're only playing with the 30 card deck they give you.
So just, let me open my binder real quick.
Yeah, otherwise you could have my Mirai deck
real quick.
I have this special 30 card deck all pre-built.
Yeah.
Using boss's orders on turn one. It was that was like the highlight of PAX. I think that it did come across that Pokemon and Nintendo put effort into a convention that I have felt slightly on the down slide since COVID. Like I've been to two PAXes after COVID, three PAXes after COVID, and seven plus before COVID, and obviously it's not the same. Like so many vendors have pulled out and have not returned and whatnot. It was okay. It's just I could see somebody being disappointed flying out there, having terrible weather, having to get Ubers, not as many vendors as years before, to be like, oh, this was like really expensive.
Was there as many people there as the years before, or was it also like a smaller crowd?
It felt a good crowd, but again, not nearly as busy as pre-COVID. Like I remember walking, PAX East is the convention center is surrounded by like a walk around that you can walk all the way around and like look down onto it, which is really cool. And the hallways all around it where they have like the panels and the bathrooms and the food. Usually it feels like before COVID that it was hard to walk through because there were so many people. And you would like turn the corner and that like whole hallway would be like pretty empty. And you'd be like, oh yeah, not nearly as crowded as it ever used to be.
Not what it used to be.
Which you could argue is maybe slightly better that you're not bumming shoulders with somebody every five steps.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. Each their own.
It sounds like there were still some fun things, but maybe not worth a cross-country trip to it.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, for my personal experience, I wanted to go like Thursday, Friday, and then like just spend like Saturday in Boston, like doing Boston things. And it's just hard to do it when it's pouring. Like when I took the train back to my friend Nick's house, the conductor was like, "Oh, the tracks are flooded here. We're going to have to go a little slow. We're like halfway underwater."
Oh, no.
I've never been on the subway going like five, because the tracks were flooded. They had to like slowly go through the, it was just raining so much in Boston. And it was like, we went to like a really nice pizza place, like Regina's, which I guess is like famous in Boston for having Boston pizza. And then it was like, okay, well, we want to go to like the famous pastry place, which is a 5-minute walk. So do we walk 5 minutes of the pouring rain, or do we try to get an Uber, which would be like 13 minutes and then like $15? It's like, I guess walk. And then we got out of the pastry place and was like, the station's on another 5-minute walk and it's still pouring. Do we wait for an Uber, like just walk again, I guess? We're already wet.
As someone who grew up in the Pacific Northwest, 5 minutes walking in the rain sounds like nothing, but the rain over there is harder, so it was probably really coming down.
Oh yeah, it was also like Boston's like, apparently Boston doesn't have like storm drains anywhere, so you'd like get to a point and
so
it would
just flooding.
Be like huge. It was potential flooding. Accurate. We'll blame Niantic on the weather though.
Yeah, always. It's always their fault.
Always Niantic's fault for the bad weather. All right, let's take a break. We come back. We actually will talk about Pokemon Go. I think April is exciting to some people. So we will be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Shaker and Spoon. Shaker and Spoon is a subscription cocktail service that helps you learn how to make handcrafted cocktails right at home. Every box comes with enough ingredients to make 3 different cocktail recipes developed by world-class mixologists. At just $50 to $60 per month, plus the cost of any other stuff you want to add, it is a super effective, super cost-effective way to enjoy craft cocktails, and you can skip and pause boxes at any time. This makes a great gift for Mother's Day, Father's day, Valentine's Day already happened, 4th of July. Look, it's a good gift, and you can get $20 off your first box by going to shakerandspoon.com/pkmncast. that is $20 off your first box over at shakerandspoon.com/pkmncast. This podcast is brought to you by Patreon. If you would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast. And for $5 a month, you can get ad-free episodes and you can get bonus episodes every month as well. That's like $1.25 a week to not hear any ads and to get a bonus episode in your podcast feed every single month. On top of that, we have tiers that send out stickers and posters and mugs. You get to join our Slack community, and we have a couple other cool things coming down the pipeline. But if you want behind the scenes, if you want ad-free episodes, if you want to join our Slack, and you want bonus episodes, you can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast to support the show and to get some cool rewards. You can also just sign up for Patreon for free. There's a little free button. You can hit that button. And you'll at least get updates coming. Also, a great way to support the show is just heading over to our Patreon and hitting that join for free button, as we are very close to 1,000 members over there. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. And we are back from our break. My brain broke there for a second. Scarlet and Violet news. We actually got news between the break. So that worked out well. There is some news before that. So this event is going to be gone by the time this podcast goes up, but a new event is starting. But I do want to talk about this event real quick, just to mention that this first time this has happened. So get ready to challenge Brute Bonnet and Iron Hands in Terra Raids. There's still a bunch of Paradox Pokemon they haven't done yet in Terra Raids. Like, I don't think had Valiant or Roaring Moon. I know that for sure. But
no,
I thought we had.
Oh, do we have?
It's hard to keep track at this
point. No, I think we've had Slitherwings and Iron Moth, but definitely not Roaring Moon
and Iron Valiant. They didn't do that with. Yeah. Oh, right. I was saying they should have done that with Paradox Rift with the TCG debut because it was those two.
I don't think we've gotten Thorns either. Everyone always forgets.
I was gonna
about
say Iron Thorns hasn't, right? Because I feel like I would.
No Sandy Shocks.
We have had Slitherwing and Iron Moth.
Yeah.
Iron Moth.
No Sandy.
Yeah, we've had Fluttermane and Iron Jugulus.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Great Tusk and Iron Treads.
That was the one that broke it all. Those were the two troublemakers.
I think that's it, other than Walking Wake and Iron Leaves.
For the first time ever, they started dropping Urba Mystica with the 7-star Blastoise, Venus, or Charizard raids. And a lot of people, including myself, thought they were going to go back to no Urba, but this is the first 5-star event, not to be confused with normal 5-star raids, because those can drop Urba whenever. This is the first 5-star promoted event that did drop Urba Mystica. It only dropped Sweet, and it was only a 3% chance, but that is a good sign that they are going to continue Urba Mystica, because it's been 4 events in a row now, or 4 different raids in a row now with Urba Mystica. So Sweet, not super great. I mean, all Urba Mystica is fine, but like Salty is the easier one for shinies, and then Spicy is better for like Humungo and stuff, which is what I care about. Yeah, that event should be over. If you didn't get Brute Bonnet or Iron Hands and you're still playing, I don't know. What are you doing?
Maybe it'll come back someday.
But that event is getting replaced with a new event that just got announced while we were recording. Maybe we should start recording at night.
Pattern.
The pattern. This is a new mass outbreak event. Will take place from Friday, March 29th to Sunday, March 31st. It will be Pichu and Happini in Paldea, Munchlax and Riolu in Kitakami, and Elekid and Magby in Blueberry. They will have the normal shiny odds, because if they did have increased, they would say increased. But they will be more likely to have the Vigor mark, which is the mark that looks like the little, like, muscles. Like, brr. Like Vigoroth, but muscles.
What?
Yeah, like.
I got that part.
Okay, good. Glad we got there together.
We're there, I guess.
Toxel didn't make the cut for baby Pokemon, I guess. Or
not this time.
Or Toxel.
The Vigor mark gives the title of the Lively. So you could get Riolu the Lively.
I think Riolu is probably the best one out of this. Everyone just got a free shiny Riolu like 4 months ago.
Free shiny Lucario.
How many of the baby Pokemon did you say? You said 2 in each region?
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of baby Pokemon.
They did skip some. Like Bonsly is in the game.
Yeah.
Mime Jr. is not in the game.
No Mime Jr.
No Mime Jr. That's right.
The Toxel is in the game. Toxel would have been more exciting than all of these. Let's be real here.
Meh.
What?
Meh. There's like plenty Toxel of Toxel out and around Paldea. It's there a lot. These are more exciting than that. I don't know. I don't like the Pokemon with the diaper. I don't like Toxel very much.
This is the breaking news of the podcast. Hannah doesn't like Toxel.
Oh, okay. I mean, Toxel's fine.
I think they chose good Pokemon. I think that a lot of people probably have the shinies for these because almost all of them have been community day Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Still. I
actually,
think
all of them have been or not Riolu.
Not all of them. Yeah, not Riolu.
Or Munchlax, you're right.
Yeah, and Munchlax, yeah. Kitakami is going to be the best choice there, unless you have won the Ogre Austin and already have a shiny Munchlax.
Yeah.
But I had just been thinking, I was hoping they would do more of these Mass Outbreaks events.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see it happening again.
Same. I'm a much bigger fan of the Mass Outbreak events than the raids, honestly, just for how I play the game. I really enjoy the Mass Outbreaks, so
yeah,
good to
I
see
like
more
them.
Of them popping up.
I like when they have an increased mark. And everyone should have a bunch of Urba Mystica since we had 3 straight weeks promoted.
Everyone should. Rates. Some of them were harder than others.
Yeah.
I will say.
If you still care about the item printer, you're probably going to see a bunch of YouTubers say, Chansey and Happini, they're wrong. Please note that. So Chance, the Happini does give 68% dust, but Magby also gives 68% dust. So it's the same. And Elekid gives 45%. So if you're on Blueberry Academy and you're just switching between like two of them, or you're just like knocking out for the dust or whatever, Blueberry, that combination of those two are probably what you want to clear out. Well, how I've always done it is like, because in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to hunt Elekid or Magby. I have those Community Day. They're Gen 1. They're not super exciting. But I will still go there, and I will still just clear that all out for the dust.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will like probably switch over to like do probably Riolu. If you're sick of getting shiny Chanseys or shiny Happinis, do the Magby. It's the same as Blissey. So that's exciting. I think Hannah mentioned before we started that Easter is coming up, so this is probably in response to like baby Pokemon Easter, that kind of stuff.
Makes sense. It makes perfect sense. April 1st is the day after that. Is that still Bidoof Day? Is that a Pokemon Company thing, or is that?
I don't know. I think it's a Pokemon Company thing. There's been a video on YouTube.
That's why they did the special delivery Bidoof last April, or the April before that, for the TCG. I think it's a Pokemon Company thing.
I don't remember what they did last year.
They did.
Was it the video? I feel like Pokemon Go had an event.
2022 was when the Bidoof video came out, but that wasn't actually an April 1st thing.
I think it came out a little bit before April 1st.
Oh, Bidoof Day is July 1st.
Oh.
My bad.
But in Pokemon Go, yeah.
No, that makes sense, because I remember streaming the Bidoof event and getting a shiny Bidoof, and if it was in April, that would probably been like too cold.
Yeah, it was July 1st. Why do I felt like for some reason April Fool's Day had a Bidoof something to it.
Because the Bidoof event was really interesting. Pokemon Go has done a number of April Fool's Day events. I think it's changed up now and then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually it's Ditto.
There was a Ditto event last year?
All of our sentences are ending with question marks?
Yeah, I don't. It's been so long. It's been like, there's been like, they didn't do a Pokemon Go event, obviously, the first year, I don't think. And then what was it, the second year they did the Pixel thing, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I missed that.
Then they did a Murkrow thing in Pokemon Go, where then like half the internet couldn't figure out if people were trolling or not, if Murkrow was shiny or not. So I guess success there.
Yeah, it looks like since then they've done Ditto. And the Pidgey. Was the Pidgey last year?
Ditto was in 2022.
Okay.
So there was a Ditto event for April Fool's in 2022. Pidgey Pandemonium?
Yes, Pidgey Pandemonium was 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, double XL and double X, S Pidgey had an increased chance.
Well, since we're talking about Pokemon Go, we'll get the Pokemon Go news out of the way here. They did post the April content update, which I feel like they posted earlier than normal. But sure.
Really depends.
Tapu Bulu will have a featured attack of Nature's Madness. From April 4th through April 9th will be the Sizable Surprise event. April 7th will be Community Day Classic, which I think we know that as Salamence. April 12th through the 17th will be Bug Out, which I don't think they've talked about yet.
No.
They have done similar events before, though.
Yeah, yeah. Because that had the bug catching net you could have as a pose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
April 13th will be Mega Heracross Raid Day, which should be exciting for a lot of people since that is a version.
New Mega.
Yeah.
New Mega, and you can only get Heracross in like small parts of Florida and Brazil.
And true. Mexico.
In Mexico, yeah.
Not Brazil. Yeah. Well, is it in Brazil?
I think it's Brazil. I think it just reaches up that far.
Definitely in Mexico, because I have multiple Heracross. from friends who had traveled to Mexico and then traded them to me.
April 20th will be commute day. Did they say which Pokemon that was?
Nope.
They didn't.
Okay. April 22nd is Sustainability Week, which I can't remember what they did for that last time. Wasn't it Trubbish 1 year or something?
Yeah. A lot of poison-type Pokemon and grass-types, I think.
There is a Hatch Day on April 28th. Which baby Pokemon haven't they done yet?
So, like, one thing that's kind of interesting is, so, for instance, the spotlight hour of April 23rd is Trubbish. That's during Sustainability Week.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The spotlight hour of April 30th is Clefairy, which is right after Hatch Day, 2 days after Hatch Day. Like, the bug out, the week that the bug out event is, the spotlight hour is actually three Pokemon. It's Caterpie, Weedle, and Wurmple. So these are kind of going along with, obviously going along with, like, the weeks.
Are you thinking they haven't done a Cleffa Hatch Day?
No, they haven't.
That's what it's sounding like.
That would be
if the spotlight hour is the hint we're going off of.
Yeah, that would be, I'd be okay with that.
Or the, yeah.
Hapu Lele will be April 3rd in raid hours. Artana and Celesteela will be April 10th. Northern Hemisphere for Kartana, Southern Hemisphere for Celesteela. And then Tapu Bulu will be the 17th and the 24th. Seems like a lot of events for April.
Yeah, and Kartana and Celesteela can be shiny, which would be the first time for both of them, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. We did learn about the sizable. We didn't talk about that last week, right? The sizable.
Yeah, do you have it in front of you?
Surprises. Yeah, so the sizable surprises event. That's April 4th through April 9th. It looks like it's going to be 2x catch XP with nice throws or better. There'll be an increased chance of encountering extra, extra small and extra, extra large Pokemon. An increased chance to encounter shiny Whalmer. And then there'll be some wild encounters, just some special wild encounters like special wild encounters like Diglett.
So special.
Mantine, Whalmer, Joltik, Tynamo, Cutiefly, Wimpod, and Seatoddle. Some trainers may even encounter Onix or Snorlax. And then Wimpod will be able to be shiny now, starting with this event as well. 1-star raids will have Fungus, Klink, Espeon, Tadbulb. 3-star raids will have Alolan Exeggutor, Galarian Weezing, Gyarados, and Snorlax. 5-star raids will have Celesteela in the Southern Hemisphere and Kartana in the Northern Hemisphere. And then mega raids will be Mega Charizard X. And there'll Charizard be some field research tasks as well.
Both these 5-stars are weak to fire.
Makes sense. Yep. There you go. And then there'll be collection challenges and Pokestop showcases as well. So should be a good event, especially with the increased chance, I think, of the extra, extra large Pokemon, more people doing those showcases. I feel like since the Pikachu reward came out.
And increased chance of extra, extra small Pokemon. Theoretically, someday we'll be able to win a showcase with the extra, extra small Pokemon.
Yeah.
I was actually with somebody this weekend. They're like, why am I keeping the extra, extra small? They're never in showcases.
Because they're
better. One day they might be.
Yeah.
Maybe.
No, definitely. As somebody who transferred all of their extra, extra large Pokemon about, I don't know, six, it was right before showcases like came out. Yeah. Make sure to hold on to all of them. Cause I was like, I'm collecting too many different things. I got to get rid of some stuff. I'm going to get rid of my shadow Pokemon. I'm going to get rid of my XXL Pokemon. And now I wish I had not done that.
Yeah. You dropped the ball there.
I really did.
All right. Final thing is, this is an article off aftermath.site. So this is Don McGowan, McGown, McGown. I don't know how to say his last name.
Wait, how is it? How is it spelled?
McGowan. Originally from Montreal.
McGowan?
Ooh, that sounds better. We'll just call him Don. Don worked for both Bungie and the Pokemon Company. And they ended up as the head lawyer for what was Microsoft Game Studio at a certain point. We don't have to bore you with all that other stuff. Got to get to the good stuff here. Well, at Bungie, they were the general Council, and that at Pokemon Company, they were chief legal officer and business affairs. And they say they, at Pokemon, ran a team of 20 lawyers and non-lawyer paralegals at the head of office in Bellevue, as well as London, and at Bungie, that was 8 people globally throughout their team. He also, Don also says, at Pokemon, I oversaw customer service team, mostly because I was in the department of things that can go wrong. Spent a lot of the time on the road because at my time during Pokemon, the brand returned to international juggernaut status because of Pokemon Go. A lot of privacy regulators around the world wanted to talk to the company, so that means I would have to go to them. Don also did things like factory tours of manufacturing facilities, making sure there was no child labor in there, etc. Take that, Crumble Cookie. And a whole different... It's a whole different conversation. They were responsible for event security, which had had more to worry about for the Pokemon World Championships. We would have players from around the world in one central location. In today's America, that means you have to plan for security incidents. This involved a lot of travel. Don was on the road for about 125 days a year and was also one of the producers on Detective Pikachu. The movie, not the game. Here's the thing about licensed property movies. The licensor wants a review of how the brand is presented. All of this stuff is like pretty boring. Logically, they were a touch point for discussions with Legendary for casting script approvals under the Producer Guild of America. Those roles are considered producer, and they say, I can't let go without saying Justice Smith and Catherine Newton are two of the nicest people in the entertainment world, and I would love to work with them in a heartbeat. So yeah, I wish there was like more there with the movie, but it was just like touch point for script and some stuff. But I would imagine there would be more touch points as well.
It's a pretty quick, small interview. I was honestly surprised when I clicked into it and started to scroll and saw that the scroll bar was so large. They don't delve into depth too much, but I have seen Don talk about Pokemon stuff every now and then just on the interwebs, and there's some interesting stuff that he's done.
Yeah, it feels like his career path is more interesting than the work he did at Pokemon.
Like, no, the work he did at Pokemon sounded super interesting too. He's the one who brokered the deal to make Pokemon Go a thing. Kind of mentions it here in a one-liner in the interview, but there's maybe it's just because I have interest in the legal side of stuff. But there was a lot of issues getting that set up there.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be huge, actually, with Pokemon Go and having to think about how that's going to work with an app like tracking your location and things, and then having all the different regulations around the different countries that are going to have that game, and then being such a big part of that game.
I feel like that would be huge. And I think there was one story at one point where they had to work out how Pokemon would or wouldn't spawn in the ocean for when people were out there on cruises. And I believe the solution was that they worked out to put Pokemon on the largest cruise line routes. And that's it. Making sure that people wouldn't be jumping off the boat.
Cruise lines routes?
At least at one point.
Wow. I didn't realize that. I did not realize that.
Never been on a cruise.
Taking the wrong cruises.
He said, at Pokemon, I was taking out unlicensed merchandise outlets. At Bungie, I was taking down cheat vendors. I looked at it as helping fans get the most authentic experiences possible. The interviewer says, before we wrap up, something I've always wondered, never got a chance to ask, is how does the Pokemon Company handle cease and desist letters? With regards to fan projects, how do you find them? Where do you draw the line? What is allowed? What does the company think needs to be shut down? He says, short answer, thanks to you folks, I would be sitting in my office minding my own business when someone from the company would send me a link to a news article, or I would stumble upon it myself. I teach entertainment law at the University of Washington, so I say this to most of my students. The worst thing on earth is when your fan project gets pressed, because now I know about you. Yeah. But that's not the end of the question. Don goes on to say, you don't send a takedown right away. You wait to see if they get funded for a Kickstarter or something similar. If they get funded, that's when you engage, because no one likes suing fans. And that's usually how it goes for most of that stuff we've covered. Usually it's like, there's this fan-made game getting made, and then the second they put it behind a paywall or they put microtransactions in it. And I'm pretty sure the Metroid fan-made game went for 6 or 7 years just fine. And then as soon as they were like, maybe give us some money, Nintendo was like, nope.
Yeah. Well, that's where it's much more rock solid anyways, when money is involved versus just a project where you're not actually monetarily benefiting from it, or at least directly benefiting from it. It's a little bit more, it doesn't look as good on the big company coming in and taking it down. But then once the money aspect comes in, it changes things legally.
Well, they could definitely take it down before money happens. It's just,
yeah. Oh, for sure.
They have but such an easier.
It's not as like, it looked like he said, like, it, then it's you're just taking down some fans thing as the big company. It's a little, it doesn't look as nice. The perception isn't as good publicly as when there's money involved. It's a little bit, it might not still look good publicly, but there is a little bit more, it's a little bit more like, oh, historically, that's how that's gone down. So I think people are a little bit more likely to not hate on the company as much when that happens versus if someone's not making any money and then the company comes in and just says you're done, you know, it doesn't look as good in the public eye.
After actually a PAX event 1 year, this is probably like 10 years ago or we covered it on the podcast. I know that for sure. So, but there was like a bar in Seattle after PAX that had like a Pokemon event with like Pokemon themed drinks and whatever you do at a bar. But they charged a cover fee, and it was normally not like a Pokemon bar. It was like a gamer bar, but they went out to heavily advertise that this is like a Pokemon themed night with a cover fee, and the anime was going to be on the TV, and we're going to have all these drinks. And they got yelled at by Mr. Pikachu for that. And I don't think that bar stayed in business much longer after that.
I was just about to ask.
Interesting. I do. So I went to, and I'm not going to say the name of the event that I went to last year, but I went to an event that did revolve around the TCG to some extent. And one of the things that they had at the event was you could buy a drink at the bar that was Pokemon themed. And you also got a pack of cards when you bought the drink as well. And I do wonder how that would factor into things.
Interesting.
Because the person who, like the team that put that event together, I would think that they would have worked with them. I mean, it's not like it's not like a secret thing. So I'm just interested in how that. I wonder how that.
Yeah, I wonder what the licensing line is for that. I feel like with a game, it's more. More obvious.
Yeah, maybe, and like the. You could obviously the booster packs were not provided by like the Pokemon company, right? It's just somebody can buy a booster box and then just give out packs of cards or whatever. And the drink was like just the name of a Pokemon. So I don't know that there's like that much connection there. Like there would be with like a bar that's heavily advertising it being like a Pokemon themed thing, but I don't know.
The lines drawn there are tricky.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't say in this interview when Don left Pokemon.
It's been a few years.
Yeah. But there's been interviews. Like Hannah said, there's been other interviews with Don. He seems cool. He seems like a cool guy. I wonder why he left Pokemon. Probably just for something bigger.
It sounded like it was really stressful. He left in May of 2020.
Mm.
Well, his current LinkedIn profile...
Finally, the hard-hitting news. We can report who's working where on LinkedIn.
Well, this is what it says. Don McGowan, if that's how you pronounce his last name. Figuring out what to do all day. I might be retired. I might be in my supervillain era. Only time will tell. Is his
I feel like
what is
if
that
you like? Were a lawyer for Microsoft / Pokemon, probably good. Like, yeah. Lawyers already make a pretty good amount.
Especially ones that are working for Microsoft and the Pokemon company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine absolutely. If you were like a lawyer for like Apple or Google or any of those tech giants, you're probably set. Or Disney. Yeah. Like, Disney lawyers are probably.
Yes. All of those, those people who are like the chief legal officer or the general counsel of those companies, as mm-hmm. far as how much they're getting paid, they're just fine. What they do with their finances, I don't know. So I have no idea if they're fine in that way. But yeah, they're getting paid just fine from the company.
All right. Well, I think that's our show. Thanks for making it to the end. It's lawyer speak. I'm sorry if you thought there was going to be something more there. If there's anything lawyers are very good at, it's talking in a way to be like, here's the shortest answer that you deserve to know. We're not giving you anything more.
There was about one line to do with the headline that most people used when spreading that news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talking about shutting down fan projects, there was one sentence, maybe
one,
two.
One sentence. Who was I with recently? They were like, oh man, you got to go see creatures and like ask them questions. And I was like, oh, because I did that in Japan. And I was like, yeah, that was like really cool. And I was like, it wasn't as cool as you thought. Not because the offices weren't cool, but the worst part of that whole experience was sharing that time with media. So there was like 10 content creators, I think, myself included. And then there was like 25 media, like IGN, comicbook.com, Spanish outlets, Brazilian outlets, etc. And the worst part was when it was question time, like hearing their questions. Because they mm-hmm. would ask questions in a way of like, I see what headline you want to write. Like, I totally yeah. understand. Like, it might even be a basic question where like, everyone here knows the answer to this question. Why are you asking it? But it, like, they want to write a specific headline and they want mm-hmm. that answer. But like, oh, this is what they said in person in front of me in Japan on 2023, whatever the date was when we went. And that mm-hmm. was like, if I was to take that whole experience, because we were there for like 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, you could have easily cut like 2.5-3 hours of like media questions and been like, none of these are really that beneficial. And I'm sure they all wrote headline. I'm sure when that, like, I was so busy in Japan, I didn't like flip over to IGN. I don't know why I'm picking on IGN. I didn't like flip over to IGN to be like, what 4 questions did you ask? And like, how did you write these articles? I'm sure they did. Reading this headline of like Pokemon former chief lawyer on shutting down fan games, and like, it was literally like one question out of the 10 questions we skipped through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what's great about like the situation you were in, where they're asking these questions at the creature's office, like, they also have a scripted answer for every single question that will probably be asked, because if they don't have an answer, they're not going to just do it off like on the fly. So it's like, you're getting these questions that the media knows they can get a headline out of, but it's like, and then on the other side, it's like, that's already been scripted in a way before they even ask the question of what that answer is going to be. Those, they know that that's going to end up as a headline. So they're going to structure their answer in a way that's only going to benefit them. You know, it's like, it's all so scripted.
Convoluted.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, and doesn't really get anywhere.
And sometimes like, in that situation, the people we were like asking the questions to were not fluent in English. And so the translators mm-hmm. would, in many cases, hear our question and then translate it to them and then like slightly change the question to something way simpler.
Mm.
And then we would get the answer back, and it was like, yeah, you answered the question that like the translator gave you. That wasn't the in-depth question that we asked. And I wasn't sure mm-hmm. if they were like translating it in a way because they they wanted to get that scripted answer. Like, oh, let me simplify this question a little bit because we know
you
what
don't
the
speak Japanese. You don't know the way in which they were translating it.
No, she would repeat the question in English in a simpler form.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's weird. That's interesting. No,
that's exactly what they're going to do in order because they can't.
And there was two translators, and sometimes they would go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like this is just an example. This question wasn't asked, but it would be like how many Pokemon cards did you sell in 2022? Again, this question was not. This is just so I would ask like how many Pokemon cards did you sell in 2022, and then they would like talk about how they were going to translate it, and then they would say like, do we sell a lot of cards in 2022? And then they would ask that, and then the answer would be like, yes, we sold a lot of cards, but that wasn't the question I asked.
Mm-hmm. But that's exactly like that. Think about that. Don't take the translation out of it completely, right? Apple, for instance, they no longer report how many like iPhones they sell in a quarter, right? So if someone asked Apple, how many iPhones did you sell last quarter? Apple's going to come back and say, we sold a lot of iPhones last quarter. They're not going to say, how many did we sell? And so I'm sure those translators also know what information is actually going to be given to the media and things like that. And so if the question were, I know like it's an example, but if the question were, how many did you sell in 2022? How many Pokemon cards did you sell? And they know, oh, we're not going to reveal that information, but we can tell you that we sold a lot of Pokemon cards in 2022. They're going to ask it that way anyway, because that's going to be the answer that's going to come back. And so I feel like
the other thing, because the pushback from Hannah is really good. Because then I have to think about like how it was like worded. There were two questions, and I can't exactly remember what they were. I think one was money related, of like, oh, did mm-hmm. you make a lot of money? When those questions were asked, you could see the person that only spoke Japanese, like the person that was supposed to answer the question, like waiting for the question. And then the two translators would be like, they would be the ones that say, oh, we're not answering that. Can you give us a different question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like they didn't even entertain the fact that like we're gonna pass this question on to the like the head honcho. They were the ones that were like, they definitely knew like, oh, he can't answer that, and we're not gonna even like give him a simplified version of this question that you just asked.
A lot of media training and a lot more control than I would have expected, but I guess that works.
That's
I'm still shocked they were like, do you want to visit creature's offices? Because I feel like that is like so guarded.
Mm-hmm.
Like even I don't even I kind of feel like they like put bags over our head and was like, this is like, I don't even know how I got in that place. Like I couldn't.
Didn't you film it? Like there were stairs. There was a vending machine. I saw that video.
You could only film on certain floors.
Okay.
But like there is no signage outside the building to say it's creatures. It's in like a shared business building with other buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So unless, I don't know if you could just go Google Map and type in creatures and be like, oh, there it is. But even if you got there, you'd have like no way to know if you were actually there or not.
But I feel like they like made you also leave out of a different door than you came in, so you're even more confused.
You had
as to
leave
where
with
you,
a ticket you came you... in. You know how like you scan like a ticket to like get onto a train and the doors open? Like you couldn't get out without scanning the same ticket you got into.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I've been in a building that was like that.
Like they wanted to make sure like you were gone. Like they were very like, do not lose this ticket because you need it to leave. Like they need to know that you are out of this building.
I wonder what would have happened if you lost the ticket. You now work for creatures. You cannot leave the building.
All right, well, that's today's episode. We'll be back next week. We'll give you the update on Raikou. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say we're probably not getting anything ZA related anytime soon. I feel like the closest would maybe be Worlds. We would get that
maybe a little bit.
Speaking of Worlds, when's we don't Worlds? Have dates for Worlds yet.
Okay, I feel like we would get something in like June possibly.
Worlds is presumably in August.
Yeah, but I feel like we would get something in like the beginning of summer from Pokemon.
I don't think this game is like January, February, March.
Oh, jeez. This conversation. I do think this game is Q1 of 2025, but that is just because of how they did the last Legends game.
Yeah, we have no other information.
Reason. Yeah.
No just a potential like pattern.
But even when they announced the other Legends, they did have a date with it right away. They did say they did say early 2022, whatever year that was.
because they had the date for BDSP. Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl as well, right? So they said both.
Yeah. We'll be back next week. If you're watching on YouTube, feel free to comment your favorite legal action.
Please do. I want to read those comments.
Please comment your favorite legal case. Pokemon or not Pokemon related, we would love to read those. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Bobby. We will see you all next week. This has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast, and we are
super effective.
Super. I think I'm changing over to my electric team and Pokemon Sleep tonight. What about you two?
Effective.
I don't have an electric team.
You will. Just not yet.
This podcast is brought to you by Patreon. A huge shout out to our producers, starting with Stephen, Kay, Tone, Stuart, Matthew, Bovine, Catherine, Josh, Jessica, Fumes, Courtney, Brian, Brady, and a huge shout out to our executive producer of Spencer. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you would like your name read at the end of the episode, or you just want to support our podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/PKMNCAST to support the show and to join our Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next week.